Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and we're drinking the beer itself.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading The Blade Itself by Joe Abercrombie, and Nate's having a beer, I think.
So my beer name is more about just kind of the overall tone of the book, and so this book is part of a subgenre of fantasy called grimdark, meaning it's dark, I guess that's what it is. So, okay, my beer is called Love Letters from Hell by Abomination Brewing, as you could probably guess, and this is a milkshake style triple India Pale Ale. Yep, there you go.
That's a lot of milk.
It definitely has some sort of like milkshakey thing going on. Not like fruit, just like milkshake. I don't know. And it's an IPA. It's different.
How strong is it?
Probably pretty strong. Because everything Abomination makes is like minimum 9% alcohol.
It's getting drunk on milk.
It's also like dark red on... Oh, 9.6. There you go. It's also dark red on black. So,
yeah, that is not ideal for old eyes.
Font coloring from hell.
In hell, nothing is legible. So... The Blade itself is the first to come out of like what it has to be 17 books now. In the the first law is the trilogy. I don't know if there's a name for like the whole thing, but the first law is the trilogy of the books that starts. But then there's a bunch of other crap.
The first trilogy.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is a book that contains a series that contains multiple trilogies that are interconnected. You know, like every other fucking fantasy series these days. So The Blade itself is the first of the original trio, which came out in 2006. And it starts off with one of the main characters, who is Logan, a.k.a. Wolverine. But he is also yes. Logan the Bloody Nine, because they're British. And the author
and
is British.
He's 9 years old.
Bloody nine-year-old keeps spilling his SpaghettiOs everywhere. No, he is the Bloody Nine because he's missing a finger, though he tells the ladies there's another reason, and he is a barbarian. He's just Conan the Barbarian slash a little bit of like Strider from Lord of the Rings.
Aragorn, yeah, for sure.
Aragorn.
He's like all the fantasy series barbarians of, you know, like guys that come from the north and they're big and strong and they fuck things up.
But he's not the biggest guy because you'll meet some other big goons later. This book also suffers from the like Game of Thrones where each character has to be bigger than the last character. Like he was 16 and a half feet tall like by the end of the series.
18 hands high. Part horse that they measure
at the hands. at the chops. But, so he's wandering around in the woods and fighting the Shanka, which I'm still not sure, orcs, but it's decaf. Yeah,
I wasn't sure if they were monsters or people, and I didn't really get it. And they don't really
flatheads.
Explain it.
They
maybe there was a reference to their hairstyle.
Yeah, they all look like the guy from Kid and Play. They all
the rock of the 90s flat top, yeah.
But he's fighting these, you know, troll orc goblins who don't speak a language. They just kind of goblin around. He's like, you're gobbling these nuts. And then he kills them. And he's been at this for some length of time, but he like falls over a waterfall and all of his crew are big TLC fans. So they don't go chasing him after that. And he's dead now. He's dead. He's returned to the mud. And then he wanders around for a while, being like, oh, I'm just so tired of being a barbarian. I've just killed so much, and everyone I know is dead. And the only way this will end will be my own death. Hopefully that's soon now. But it has this line about his being hungry. He was brutal hungry as it was. His belly was a great painful hole that called to him with piercing cries. Like, I'm pretty sure he just had Jack in the Box. Like, that's what that gastrointestinal problem is. And that's the one thing I highlighted in the entire book. And then he wanders around for a while, and then he talks to the spirits because he's also part Miss Cleo. And he calls dead things. And this was confusing because he seems to talk to his friends that are alive.
I think they were spirits of like ancestors or some shit.
Yeah, they weren't the spirits of the people who are alive still. There's something else.
It's not like he wasn't talking. That's not when he talked to the dog man.
I think he was
Lil Bow Wow.
He was remembering like how much he's going to miss those guys because he thinks they're all dead. Because he manages to like get back to the campsite where they were, and it's like, oh, looks like everybody's dead. Just because you know he's at this point, you know his family is dead, his wife and children are dead, and they're never in the series at all. But the Flatheads have killed a lot of people. So it's like they attacked us. I ran away. Everybody else must be dead. Turns out they're not. But he does in a scene in the beginning kind of reminisce about, I'm really going to miss those guys.
The raping and pillaging we did together was really a formative experience.
Everyone in the North has a cool nickname, like kids in the Sandlot.
The Great Bambino? The Sultan of SWAT?
Like, he's Nine Fingers, and the other guy is Dog Man. And then there's the other guy who's like the worst or something.
There's Three Trees.
Three Trees, yeah. That's got to be about his dick, right?
Got the girth of three trees, but they're all saplings. It's very confusing.
Three bonsai trees.
Yeah, and that's why he's so angry and kills people. Then there's Tulduru Thunderhead, who's vaguely Native American in name only.
Black Dow.
Oh, Black Dow, yeah, the guy who's just never successful in the stock market. Just
but these characters are mostly useless
one time.
So
yeah, they're all cool. They're this, you know, it's like any other action movie where you get the motley crew, like the explosives expert who is also a wisecracking kind of clown, and the big scary guy who doesn't talk much, and
the sweaty guy.
Yeah, the sweaty guy who's always like thinking about snacks.
I think this is just Scooby-Doo now.
So yeah, he's looking for those goons. Oh, he thinks they're dead.
He thinks they're dead, so he's like, I'm just gonna, I guess, go south to civilization because everywhere else sucks. But then the spirits, because he can, he's one of the few people left that can speak with spirits. So the spirits tell him, go south. The first of the Magi wants to speak with you. And he's like, who?
Is that the frankincense one? Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no one knows what that's for. I don't want to talk to him.
Hope there's no drummer boy. And then he, so he does. And then he eventually finds his way south. The book, because it's
Quantus,
a fantasy book.
Or whatever his name was.
Because it's a fantasy, epic fantasy series, there are multiple important point of view characters. And so it'll do some of his story, and then it'll go to the stories of some of the other people who are going to end up being very important. The characters in this book, I mean, this is definitely the Fellowship of the Ring, the Joe Abercrombie's Fellowship. That's kind of the plot of the book, or at least getting the Fellowship together.
The bromance of the stuff.
But if it was written by the guy who made that 80s cartoon Heavy Metal, which I never saw, but yeah. I assume is like this.
This is by Junior Tolkien. just J.R., see what it did there.
JR from Dallas.
Yeah, and he's who did shoot me?
And the characters...
Topical references.
The characters definitely are, let's just say, built from archetypes, but I thought in a way that made them, you know, recognizable, but they still definitely felt like characters.
I think it's I think the archetypes of the fantasy genre are so...
just so baked in that it's like have to do it.
You have to have a hot lady. You need to have a hot lady. Otherwise, what will they masturbate to?
So you don't even get her until like halfway through the book. It's just all the dude fest.
They edged the first. Well, you meet.
That's true.
You meet RDD2 or whatever her fucking name was.
I also thought of R2D2, yes.
Well, I was also thinking of Hardy's. Because she does make some guy Hardy. You meet her. Early on.
But she's merely a side character. She's like the sister of another character who's minorly important, and she's the object of lust for one of the other main characters.
Well, she'll come back. She'll be a thing.
Oh, I'm sure.
So the second important character you meet is San Danglokta, who, can I say, because I definitely did the audiobook for this, read by a British guy, I really thought it was Glockter the entire time because he just said it like Glockter.
Glockter.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I really thought it would have, that word would have ended in an ER, but it didn't. But anyway, so he is kind of, I think, the more interesting character. But I guess he's more like Gollum in a way.
He looks so like Gollum.
He's a smart Gollum.
Yeah,
Mensa Gollum.
He used to be a dashing young, like, cavalry officer and winner of the, like, fencing tournament.
The Scripps spelling bee that they all competed. Yeah,
but that was 10 years ago where he had been captured by the enemy and then horribly tortured for 2 years. Like, constantly for 2 years. He's like the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed of this world.
And he's like the Guantanamo.
Where he's got like all these like horrible injuries. His leg is horribly injured and is never healed. And then also the people who tortured him, they pulled out half of his teeth, but every other tooth. So that so he has half of his teeth, but they all just fit into the gum of the upper of the other one. So he has half of his teeth and none of them work to do anything. He has to mostly eat soup.
He's a human jack-o'-lantern.
Kinda, yeah.
Yep.
And he's all fucked up. He shits himself regularly.
And every time he moves,
he can barely walk.
Incredible pain.
Yeah, he needs physical therapy very badly. But they haven't invented that. They're still making fucking, you know, cod pieces because it's, you know, high medieval fantasy. Everything feels like it's 1250s Europe.
It's getting closer to the Renaissance, actually. The setting, the historical setting is more 1320s
Italy.
Exactly. just a little bit, later. Like, you can kind of tell.
They're really interested in the doges, but one guy's like, I think we should make money out of that. And like, shut the fuck up. He's like, it'd be low-key really cool. It's like, what if it was the coin for the Doge, and we called it Dogecoin?
Another timely reference.
To the moon. So you meet him, and he is the Inquisitor.
Yes.
He leads the Inquisition. But everything is like, because it's fantasy, you can't give them regular names. So it'd be like one letter off from a real name. So it's like the Spanglish Inquisition or something. Just like the honorific name, the nobility name is Dan instead of Van. So like some of them I read fast, like the guy's name is Jean-Claude Van Damme, and then like, oh no, it's like Cromwell Dan Bam. I'm like, oh, okay.
Also, cavalry, their word for cavalry is Carl.
Carl.
Just, you know, all those Carls are coming at us. I just thought of fucking Aqua Teen. We're like, hey, I'm coming to get you. Look out, I got a sword.
Oh my God. He touched my hand. I have to wait for the skin on that hand to die now. It's going to smell like chop meat. So
Glockta,
the other, yeah, the Glockta,
he's
Glockter.
He's an inquisitor and...
which is a very, very fancy way to say he's curious. Oh my God, that'd be an amazing like bar name. The Inquisition for the very curious. Are you
Catholic gay bar? So anyway, his sort of main plot is to kind of uncover a little bit of a mystery, more like do the bidding of the head Inquisitor, which is kind of like clearly just okay. So first he's like torturing a guy, and the guy is like, "What are you talking about? And he's like, "We used to be in the army together," and he's like, "I really don't care. That was an old me. After 2 years of." 2 years of torture, I really, that means nothing to me now. And he's like, just confess. I don't care what it's to, just confess. Oh, and name all the other people. So the guy he's torturing is one of the head, like, merchants who's, like, very rich and have become, like, the upstarts. See, this is why it's, like, the Renaissance, because it's, like...
damn guilds.
Because it's, like, the merchants are now becoming super wealthy and important, and all the old nobility are like, oh, no, fuck those guys.
But I was going to pay for a new altarpiece at the...
So he has to, like, you know, get this guy to confess. So he talks about, like, torturing him. So he tortures him until he confesses, and he names the other people onto, like, all the other, like, top merchants in the Merchants Guild, or the Mercers. And then he has to do that, and then he brings it to the head Inquisition guy.
Maybe I was projecting it, but didn't you get the sense that they used a lot of stereotypes for a certain group of people for the merchants? That they're like, them and their money, those greedy people controlling everything.
Like, controlling the banks.
They control all the money, and they're so greedy, and what do you mean? And then they're like, what was the name of the guild? They were like the
Mercers
the Mayanists. No. They were he started writing merchant. He's like, no, I gotta think of something different. I already came this far. Mercer. There you go.
There was also like the Spicers or the other one. They just, it's like Dune.
A little bit of Dune slipped in there.
Dune.
Just a sprinkle of Dune spiced in. So sorry, then this is Glockta's.
But it's like every other, you know, Inquisition where the people at the top just use their power to eliminate their enemies as they all struggle for power behind.
Well, because they're all angling for power because the king is an old, fat, senile man. So he's on the way out and everyone's trying to like set themselves up for the, you know, what are they going to do as they just destroy the lives of the peasantry?
They all want to be the hand of the king, but they run it through their secret. They have their own little house of lords that runs everything for real.
Who was the guy that like headed the complaint desk? Like Hoff or something like that? Who then they were like, oh my God, it's so fucking hot in here. And these peasants keep complaining about shit.
He was another he's another person
on the
Chamberlain.
Wilt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Neville.
Neville. Aaron Neville, though. It's very
Aaron
weird.
Neville, yeah.
What do you want? And then so they
all you're complaining.
Then you go back to... Oh, no. So then you meet the third character, which is Jizal Dan Luthor.
Jism, yeah.
Who, he is a very young, you know, early, you know, young aristocrat. He's in the army, and he's in the military, but he's also, like... training to compete in the fencing tournament.
Oh, it has a very, very clever creative name though, Nate. The Contest.
Yes.
Capital C.
Ooh, yeah.
Say they didn't do that in the audiobook. You didn't know it was a capital C.
I didn't know that, no.
It's like The Contest trademark. They're like, actually it's like Tabasco, so I was like, we own that name. You can't call anything else The Contest. So he is training half-assedly.
Because he's a spoiled rich boy.
Yeah, and you really don't want to root for him.
No, he's a real dickhead.
So, yeah, he's, at first, you know, he doesn't kind of want to do it, but he's like, well, my father thinks I should, and this is a way I can get, you know, like, important and famous, but he doesn't actually want to work hard. He wants to just drink and play cards all night and not do any work.
Bang ladies.
Yes, and peasant ladies. Girls. One of his friends, actually, he's commanding officer, and one of his friends is Colonel West. And Colonel West was
not
actually
a noble.
Not a noble. He was a filthy commoner who just worked really hard to be competent at the military. And the series has a number of really hilarious scenes where West is like trying to actually lead the army in all the like. Aristocratic generals are like, I am not talking to him. I'm not talking to that other guy. I am the leader here, but anyway, there's some like really funny things. Anyway, so Colonel West, he's actually competent and he's a friend of Giselle, but he also has a younger sister who has just like, he was, you know, now Giselle's age and has now come
just
to
got
town.
Hot.
Yeah. And it's really hot,
but in like a not traditional way, because like, well, everyone's into thin Aryan looking girls and she's like some hot Mediterranean mommy,
and he learns thick. That you know, once you go poor you never go back. I think
you couldn't have, there must be a rhyming version of that.
Once you go lower class you don't want any
that's
other
your preferred
ass?
Type of ass.
Yes. But that is his whole character arc is he falls in love with one poor girl.
I think it's the lower the socioeconomic status, the sweeter the juice is. They're like, I don't think that's how it works.
It's a slant rhyme at best.
But also, one last thing about Artie is that she doesn't act like a rich girl because she's not.
And she has opinions.
Yeah, fucking this uppity
and
bitch.
Thoughts.
And Giselle, or whatever his fucking name is supposed to be, is like, this makes my dick move. I don't know. Like, maybe I'm a sub. I don't know. I kind of want her to boss me around. I saw this funny cartoon. It was like, you know, two people looking at on a hill, looking out at the stars. And it's like, when you look at that, don't you see how insignificant you really are? But then you see it's a dominatrix standing on a guy on a leash. That's it's when he realized, like, I kind of want her to boss me around, put me in my place because I'm a spoiled little cunt. And she's got the boobies. And that's all it takes.
Yeah.
So then there's still more characters that have to be introduced.
Okay. So they go back to... So finally, the story shifts back to Logan, where he's like been just wandering through the wilderness for like a month or two now. And he's like really, really grubby and thin and, you know, barely had any food for, you know, he's had some food to like kill the deer. Anyway, so finally he finds the magician's apprentice, or the magi's apprentice, and then they immediately gets okay. And then they like, but then they get attacked by some of the other like Northmen who are like out, because Logan has. This is where you find out that Logan has no longer works for Bethod, the new king of the North, and who Bethod has made all the other Northmen, or who are all just like little tribes or little villages, made them all like bow to him. And but Logan used to be his like champion who killed everybody for him, but now he hates him. You don't find out too much. You find a little bit more about this in the later books, but and where Bethod becomes a much more important character. But anyway, but this is where Logan first demonstrates that he's a like badass fighter, you know. Though I don't
fighting off a bunch of goon like random yeah. goons that they pass by, because the magician's assistant is dying of like typhoid or something.
Mm-hmm. But yet Logan is also like honorable and wise, mostly just because he's seen a lot of shit and killed
he
a
has
lot of people.
Still.
Yeah. And but now he's like, wow, maybe, you know, he's just kind of like had a lot of rough things happen to him. So now he like has a perspective on life.
And he's not that old. He's only in his 30s.
But he's quite grizzled from being injured many times.
He's mad-eye moody. Looking guy.
Anyway, so then he like helps, he like carries the apprentice all the way back to the
Hogwarts.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah, to the house, and then you finally meet
Joan Baez.
Joan Baez, yeah. Yeah.
Joan Baez, the first of the Magi.
Which, you know, let's just say I called that. I knew that. Like that she was a wizard.
She is. And what the fuck else was Dylan? Did Dylan see in her?
Baez, the first of the Magi, is clearly the Gandalf of character for sure.
But he's a little bit more. He does more wizard shit.
He's cool.
I was happy to see like, oh, a wizard that actually does stuff. Thank God. All the other books spend so much time like, oh, I'm a wizard. Like, but I don't really do any magic for reasons.
Yeah,
do the magic.
I'm going to go on a separate, not commented on quest while you do the important quest I told you to do.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to go. Though he does a fair amount of being like, I'm going to wait till like you guys have completely run out of options, then I'll step in and help.
Yeah, Gandalf didn't even do that. He's like, ooh, oh, luck. We got good luck. Never mind. We're good.
Well, he needed a wardrobe change for him to get into it.
This robe is so dirty.
It's not my dirty robe.
Used to be white.
Yes. All of fucking Fellowship of the Rings was an extended commercial for Tide and Clorox. Imagine that was like a movie tie-in when The Lord of the Rings came out, that they were like, by the power of... I was going to say power of Grayskull, but that's fucking...
And now I'm Gandalf the White, thanks to Tide.
Tide pens. So many Tide pens.
No, you must sort that into for Gandalf the Colored. Like, oh, no, that didn't. No, that's not. And Gandalf the White? No, I don't think that's what. No, no, no thing. Never mind. Fly, you fools. So then they meet up, and he's Joan Baez. I'm trying to find the book, the description of, but he's like bald and has a goatee, and he looks like a butcher. So I like how the Joe Abercrombie was like, let me make him not look like every other fucking wizard. I mean, he's still
short beard,
old because he
a long
is old. He's like an aging Steve Austin.
He just kind of has a Steve Austin vibe, kind of, yeah.
He's kind of gruff. You know, he's dropped some hard R's in his life.
Yeah, probably. But he's like, hey, I was looking for you. He's like, I know. I was like, do you want to know what for? He's like, no.
Fuck
and
it.
That's it. We still don't know by the end of the book what they're doing. I was like, okay, I guess.
Keep well, he needs him to be me. A witness later. But yeah,
deniability.
So he's like, cool. And then, of course, right away, perfect timing, right? Logan's there for about 16 minutes. And then the King of the Northmen shows up.
Well, first his shitty son shows up.
Oh, yeah.
And they Prince say, like, get out of here, shitty kid. We would wait for Big Daddy. And then Big Daddy shows up. And this is my favorite line in the whole book, which is just like, why? Why did Stephen King write this this paragraph? And like he's hey,
those testicles,
because the king guy comes with his assistants, who are like one very large guy. I think it was his other son.
Yeah, he had one son that like got to eat, and the other son didn't. So
yeah,
one son looks like the Juggernaut.
Yeah, Juggernaut son and a wizard lady who's doing magic, and he's like, oh, did you come from up north? From the utmost north. Imagine that. It must be cold up there at this time of year. Rough on the nipples, eh? Like, what? Why'd you say that? Such a weird thing to do, man.
I thought it would be amazing because like he did some magic to them, right? Like he like canceled out her spell because she comes in, she's doing the like
magic
seductive
talk.
Witch thing where they're like, ooh, I just like her. And then Baez is like, fuck that. And he force fields it. It would have been amazing if he's like, rough on the nipples, huh? And then like she started bleeding. I think that would have been like,
it's like chafes. I just run a marathon.
I'm told Band-Aids will prevent that.
It's the Renaissance. I don't have Band-Aids yet. Or Vaseline.
Yeah, so they show up and her name was Clyburn or something. It doesn't matter. She doesn't count.
Yeah.
She does lady magic. That's not real magic in this world.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, she is tapped into the evil arts of which
is the first law.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you get a little bit of explanation or sort of backstory of how the magic in this world works, but actually not very much. It is mostly just magic happens and is magical, and it doesn't need rules or
it involves a lot of study
stuff like that.
Well, the few people who are, you know, the good magicians, good magi, they're all really old, and they were, you know, original disciples of Magic Jesus, whose name was Juvenal or something. Yeah, it's not like a brand. That sounds like a brand of lotion or something.
That's Jergens.
All right, Jergens. Yeah,
they knew why they called it that.
Yeah, all the fucking weeby guys. It's like, oh, I'm gonna need a lot of Jergens for some passages in this book
for jerking it.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's.
So Baez. He like kicks them out, and then he says, "Actually, this is really bad. They're using
because they,
dark
they,
magic.
They're there because they want him to help them because they're invading the kingdom, which like they're from
and they
the
want
north.
His help because he's the most powerful wizard in the world. So like they want his help, and he's like, "No, I won't help you."
But I like he's like, "Okay, I'll help you out. What's the plan?" They're like, "We're gonna do an invasion, and we're gonna take this thing." He's like, "Wait. Gotcha. No, I'm not. Magic."
Yeah, and also that they're using, the lady wizard is using dark magic because she's broken the first law, meaning eaten the flesh of humans.
That's the second law.
Oh, that's the second law.
The first law is don't touch the other side directly. You can only,
That's why God invented the perineum.
The magic is tainted.
So, okay, there's still so much book left. All right.
This is like, they still haven't introduced, like, the scary villain side character, the Feared, who is 19 feet tall and half covered in tattoos, which obviously are magical. And
he can't be hurt.
He can't be hurt. So the Northman guy, Batod, or whatever his fucking name was, is using
Batod.
Him
as a weapon. Hey, I'm Batod.
Batod. Like, there's the scene when they bring him to Parliament, and they're like, well, you could give us Angland. One of the more creative names that Joe came up with in the book. Angland and the Gurkish.
Famed pickle makers.
It's like their Gurkish rugs are really good. So they got to meet the Feared. And you're like, oh, that's going to be an exciting fight between him and Logan at some point in the book that you could set your watch to. Or
because
at some point in the
series. The Feared is there when he and some other little guy come to the state capital, wherever the fuck that is, you know, in the middle of the middle kingdom where they all live. And he's like, you guys, we're going to invade if you don't just give us the North Territory. But you could also do this old school way where one of our guys fights one of your guys and we'll call it squaresies. And they're like, who are you going to fight? Like, how about this big magic guy who stabbed himself for fun and then has no wounds afterwards? Like, no, we'll just do the war thing. Sorry, you guys can go.
In the next yep. book.
I like to think because they're like in between, they're on this continent, presumably, right? In between two other countries.
And I looked up a map because I was like, I cannot grasp what the fuck this place looks like. It is kind of confusing.
Oh, I just thought that the Northmen were Canadians trying to steal Portland.
It's funny, with the series, I've really just done the audiobooks, and I've never looked at a map, and I've just brought it up now, and I'm like, oh, that's what it looks like? Because in my mind, I'm just picturing Europe.
Yeah, it's I'm a like, very okay, strange
that's
England, layout.
That's Italy, because, you know, that's this spot, you know, and I'm really just picturing Europe in my head, even though I know that's not what it is, but... Like, oh, that looks way different. Not that it actually matters that much. So, okay, we've got this one thing, one plot line where the North is going to invade the Union. The Union is like the main country where everything takes place, which is mostly the capital of Adua. Anyway, so midway through the book, Baez and Logan and the Apprentice, they make it to the capital city, and they're there because... Baez, because he's like 1,000 years old, and he's technically still part of the government, or more like there's a seat on the council
he's
for
like
him.
He's Sinn Féin. He has a couple of seats, and he just never takes them.
Yeah. So technically, there's been a seat on the open council that's just waiting for him, but he's been so long, like 1,000, like so many generations, that people think he's not real. Like, that's just all myth. That's part of our founding myth that this guy Baez, you know, helped founded our country.
It's like when you leave a seat for Elijah at Shabbos. It's like, if he shows up, you're like, come on, you're not really Elijah. Where is he? Who are you?
Yeah, so
he didn't say which Elijah.
So he shows up with Logan and they're there and people, it's a one plot line is that people don't think he's actually the real wizard. And he also, first thing they do when they get into the city is they go to a costume shop. And he's like, get me their brightest, craziest wizard robe you have in your costume shop. He's like, I'll take it. And then get me some, like, you know, barbarian clothing for my friend here. And so they do, like, dress the part in a crazy way. So they go, and yes, I'm really the first of the Magi. Nobody believes him, especially the head of the Inquisition. He's like, and he tasks Glockta with finding out if they're real. And at first, like, no, they can't be real. Magic, that's not real. And there's some funny scenes where Baez is like, oh no, I'm real.
Also, at this point, he has made several people explode.
Yeah, so you as the reader know that he's real, for sure. And he's done some like crazy magic already. You know he's real. But the people in the city, they don't know. And the people in the government are still very skeptical.
Even though they have
skeptical.
A fucking statue of him.
Yeah, and he looks like, well, they think he's an imposter. He's just they think Baez is a guy who's just, you know, he's just an actor pretending to be Baez. But, you know, the head of the Inquisition, he's skeptical because he's supposed to be. And also, he's just out for his own power and stuff like that. Meanwhile, Giselle decides that he's actually going to fight in the tournament. He's actually going to train hard for the tournament, for real, for the
contest.
When they
reverse psychology him?
Yes, where everyone is, where he's like, no, I'm just going to give it up. And he's like, and everyone was like, you know, I knew you wouldn't amount to anything. And he's like, what? Fuck you. Now I have to win. And so then he does it. He does it out of spite.
Because he's a little rich cunt. But it's especially, he decides, when Artie says, like, oh, good, I had bet $10 you'd puss out. And he's like, what? No, I don't want her to think of me like that. I want her to touch my penis. And so, and because she's related to his, like, boss, his superior, or friend, or whoever the fuck it is, he can't bang her. He can't just, like, treat her like a throwaway peasant girl who he can manipulate and discard. He's like, I have to actually work for this a little bit. Fine. I'll start running my, like, laps and stretching my hamstrings or whatever bullshit he has to do.
Well, he starts, instead of just drinking heavily every night, he actually does his, like, running, and he actually trains at fencing hard every day, gets better. Well,
yeah, I hope that part's important, because I've been on, like, 3.5 weeks of not drinking, and I don't really feel that much, like, improved. Giving up the drinking is a small part of the process, I've learned.
But he's nervous for the contest because everyone's like, there's this new guy who's real good. He's just going to beat everybody. So, like, you're going to have to train real hard to beat this good guy, Gorst, who's just beating the shit out of everybody. And they don't know why, or we don't know why as a reader yet. And then they get to the contest, and it turns out it's because he's really big, and he just whacks people until they get exhausted and lose.
Big cock, yeah.
Yeah. Because this is not, you know, when they say fencing, they don't mean, like, fencing as we know it. It's... big it's sword, like, and little sword.
Rapier, dagger.
But yeah, the big guy's technique is, I'm just going to use really, really heavy swords and just whack people until they get too exhausted and they lose. And
well,
I'm
he does a, it's like the rope-a-dope, strength. But it's...
Yeah, but
melee weapons. The like fjord of sword.
Rope-a-dope. Instead of just let it happen to you.
Oh, he goes on the defense?
What?
Thing? Fencing?
Oh, no? Damn it. Well, it's still offensing.
No? Well, he does that as well. He transitions.
Yes. Wait, what could but they're all at the contest, rope-a-dope. And then, like, Joan Baez is watching the contest. Like, you want to make a bet on who's going to win? And Logan's like, oh, I'm a big guy. Big guy's going to win. That's what happens. And he's like, well, we'll see about that. And then he cheats, and he does magic and makes the little guy win so he could win the bet.
I love that magic is used for mostly petty bullshit in this book.
And exploding guys. And in the end, the shitty little kid wins, and the big guy's like, wow, thank you for beating me. I was getting really bored.
I can go back to...
Showing you that cheating does help everyone.
Yeah, that's the third law. Cheating. Everybody benefits from cheating.
Yeah, everybody.
If you do it right.
Magic.
I'm cheating with you. I'm not cheating at you. But yeah, but they don't tell little Jism that he won by magic. So he
just
thinks
he did really
even
good.
Even more of himself.
Yeah. He thinks he's like the best sword fighter ever, which he is not. He's pretty good, but he's not the best ever.
Glockta was better than him. But, you know, he's all fucking spasmed.
And also, Glockta is now pissed because he had bet against him. And he's like, that fucking wizard did some magic. I know it. There's no way that kid won fair.
Yeah, he's the smart character. Right? Like
the guy with no teeth. Kind of Or not enough teeth and not enough leg.
Well, he has no toes on one leg.
And too much duty in his bed.
Yeah, like every character kind of, I mean, yeah, they fit into these neat roles of the strong and honorable guy and the conniving but very smart guy. And
the jaded like the skeptic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think 2 years, if, you know, he's been like mega McCained. You know, he can't do shit. So.
Yeah, you know, every time he has jaded. To go somewhere, it hurts him. And every time he has to go to like a crime scene because he's inquisiting, it's always upstairs. He's like, it's always upstairs. Why can't they kill anyone on the ground floor? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he's like Danny Glover from Lethal Weapon the whole time. He's like, wow, my God, I'm getting too old for this shit.
I ain't got enough leg for this shit.
But yeah, then Logan's enemy is the King of the Northmen and Glockta's enemy is stairs.
My only weakness.
Fuck, this building isn't ADA compliant. No, pull out his fingernails. Also, we didn't talk about the what do they call them? The practicals, the goons that go with the Inquisitor. And he's got a giant albino who has no tongue, so everything is just lispy sounding, like, hey, thought about that, and that's how all his dialogue is written. And then there's what's his name? Severus Snape. It's something very close to that is Severard. The other guy's name. Severard, right? Who's just like sneaky and but they're very loyal to Glockta.
And then he goes to the library where the oldest man in the world besides Baez lives. And he's like, no one does readings anymore. He's like, show me your reading stuff. Because he's got to figure out, is this the real Baez? And he finds a first edition of Goodnight Moon. And at the end of it, it's like...
Goodnight Baez.
Goodnight Baez. At the end of it, it's like, then they gave Baez the key to the House of the Maker, which is this building right there in like the center of the Capitol that no one can find the key for. So they just left it. It's like, all right, well, we'll figure that out one day. So if he has the key, then he's the real guy. But he's not going to have the key because he's not the real guy because magic's not real.
And the maker is this, isn't that also Juvens?
No,
is
that
Juvens
was
the maker?
Canadius.
Oh, yeah.
They're like brothers or something? It was kind of confusing.
Yeah, they were brothers.
Yeah, and one killed the other one. And Canadius, which is Canada in Latin.
And Canadius killed Juvens, and then all of his Juvens' like disciples tried to kill Canadius. These are the myths that I don't know. It didn't really explain it, what was supposed to be happening.
It's merely the first book in the series, so it didn't go. It left that deliberately murky.
Thank God he didn't go full Tolkien on that shit and give us a 47-page story about how John Tombadnall is the guy who knew him and they hang out in the woods and, you know, and you get to the end of that story and you're like, all right, cool. What happened next? Like, oh, then he picked up an envelope, next chapter. You know, we didn't need all the lore. It's not as fleshed out as in other series. And I was totally cool to not care. But the House of the Maker just sits there in like prime real estate and nobody knows how to get into it. And it's just like a weird Escher painting of a house. They're like, well, this is a Chekhov's key. This is what's happening, basically.
So yeah, it turns out Baez has the key and then he opens it up. And then inside is all of this kind of like magical stuff going on. And everyone is like, this is crazy. And then they walk a bunch inside. But they don't go upstairs or ramps or anything. And then they come out on this doorway and they're looking over the city at the top of the tower. It's like, how the hell did that happen?
And Glock is like, oh, I need to get me one of these things. I hate stairs.
I'll have what he's having. Yeah, the house defies the laws of physics. That's how good he was at making shit. That's why they called him the maker.
Mm. Not because he pooped once.
No.
I made.
He's the master maker.
That's one of the other, like the other, the feared. There's the other guy, the maid. And he just takes big shits. Like, oh God, no, this is so horrible. If you could outshit my champion, you could keep your lands. I choose the maid. This is a guy carrying around like a bucket of beans.
Meanwhile, the former slave, Pharaoh, who's a very angry lady.
Gamo.
Pharaoh Gamo, yeah.
Pharaoh Gamo. Or she's Pharaoh Rochet.
She's in the southern place, the Gurkish thing, and she's looking to kill pretty much everybody. And a wise old guy's like, hey, don't kill everybody. Just come with me
and
instead.
She tries to kill him.
Yeah, that's what she does. She's the only thing she does. She's really good. She's the Legolas, but like angrier Legolas. She's good at bowing airplanes. And she can't see colors, which I guess is important later.
She's post-race, man. She does not.
Yeah, she's just so accepting. She's actually quite racist because she calls everybody from the other kingdom pinks, which is, I guess, funny because she doesn't know that they're pink or what pink is. But... like all these fucking pinks moving into the neighborhood. Like, oh, Jesus.
She watches a lot of Fox News and she's like, these pinkos.
Or the opposite of Fox News is, I guess.
She thinks they're commies.
She hates them because they did a war
And, then, and it's been a while. It's like in the back story that they fought wars with the Gurks and the Canadians.
And yeah. She
lost everything.
And she was a slave her whole life. And she's like, she's had a hard time of it. So her mission is now to kill everybody. And then eventually she'll, of course, find her way to the fellowship with the old other guy.
The colorblind thing is really
She's with Radagast. And Radagast is bringing her up north. Basically.
Wait, who's Radagast now?
Radagast
is one of the other wizards.
Radagast, the taupe? What was his color?
He was the brown.
Was he the brown?
Yeah, he was the Saruman? Brown wizard.
What's Saruman's color? Was he the...
Saruman was white.
Saruman was also white?
I don't know.
They had two wizards of the white? Those were the grand wizards?
I have no fuck. Yeah. I mean, he basically was the grand wizard.
Yeah,
that's so why they didn't get along. In book two. That's why they get the kid. We can't both be Grand Cyclops.
So they go, they're in the magic Escher house, and he finds a thing. He's like, there's a magic box, and
it's
there's
the
a lot
box
of bad stuff.
From Hellraiser.
It. Yeah, it is. It's the Hellraiser box. And it's like, don't open it. A lady with CDs for a face is going to cut your dick off, and you'll love it. He's like, well, I guess I don't want to do that. Yeah, and so they take the box, and you're like, I don't know what's in the box. It's Gwyneth Paltrow's head. But
you're like, good. She has a fucking candle that smells like that, probably.
My severed head. You know what? I would respect her for that and only that.
That'd be a bold move. This candle smells like my severed head. So that's what we need to do. We need to sell a candle that smells like my asshole. This candle smells like Mike's ass.
The day after Arby's.
Oh my God. What if we sold, how about this, a three pack, but you don't know whose ass is which candle?
You
have to guess. And people could write in, like, I'm pretty sure the blue one is Jimmy's ass because it kind of smells like a guy who plays bass.
It smells sadder.
This one smells a little more New England-y. I think this is Nate's ass.
It smells like clam chowder.
It smells like raw milk because New Hampshire doesn't allow boiled milk.
Yeah, it's all really watery, this candle. Like it just came out in the fucking waterfall of a man's asshole.
It's just E. coli and raw milk. FDA can suck my dick.
If you're interested in these candles, by the way, we do have a Patreon where you can support the podcast. I don't know if I'll have the candles out there anytime soon. But you could be a patron at patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub and get early access to episodes, exclusive content. Join us for our live episodes. And if we ever do get the candles together that smell like our assholes, we'll send them to you there for sure. Because if we send them to anybody else, it'd probably be a crime.
It's actually an assault.
These candles smell like our asshole. It's like a sentence the Borg says. All right, what happens next?
Okay, so a bunch of other things kind of happen to kind of like end this book, which actually means setting up the next book and like the rest in like the trilogy, right? So the North is going to invade, and so Colonel West, because he's like from the North, is like, we need you to go to England. You need to help me lead the army, be my like chief of staff, so that when we send the army to England, we can fight the Northerners. So he's like, oh, okay, fine. He goes there, but he's got to get ready, which means he has to like somehow get his sister to stop being so annoying. And he's like, Glockta, you were my friend once. Will you look after her when I'm gone? And he's like, yeah, okay. Because they have a little heart to heart, and then Pharaoh finally gets to the city and meets Baez, and Baez convinces her to like go with him. He has not explained for what yet. He has not explained it at all. Why he's creating the fellowship for? But that is what he's doing.
I mean, he kind of mentions he's like they want to kill a bad guy.
Well, he's like, we're going to the end of the world. That's all he says at the very last line of the book, and he's like, oh, that's where we're going. And because Logan at first is just like, I just don't want to know.
Just use me, daddy.
Yeah. And so they're going to go and do that. And then Giselle ends up being ordered to go with them. So now the fellowship is Baez as you know, Baez and Logan and Pharaoh and Giselle. And so they're all going to be off together on this voyage. Oh, and they also get this other guy, this navigator dude named Proudfoot. Am I imagining that?
That's one of the hobbits.
Yeah. Named
Gimli. He's really good at telling where which direction to go when he's looking for stuff. This is his magic power. It's kind of weird. Like, you should take a right here. Like, no, I know. You got to take a left. It's like, okay, dude, sure.
And then, but then just as they're about to...
Longfoot.
Okay. And then just as they're about to leave, Pharaoh decides to, about to leave for their journey, like that day, she just like disappears and is not there. And Baez is like, go find her. And Logan is like, okay, I'll go find her. And finds her. She's being like attacked by these men in masks and black robes. But because she's really, she also has these like super healing powers and is like a very good fighter herself. She like is almost winning like 1-on-3 or 1-on-4, but he decides to help. And he, then they take out the first 3 or 4 and then they run. And then they like, they a bunch more attack them and then they fight them off and they have to climb this thing and jump through this window and then they fall through the roof and then get attacked more. And then Logan does this thing, which he will do later in the books too, later in the other books, where when he's like in a fight and he's like about to die or about to, you know, be defeated, he gets this like ultra Hulk strength and ultra total like berserker bloodlust thing. And then can use that and then will just like beat anyone. He's like super strength, super stamina, and like, you know, becomes much better.
But he has no control over
it. But he kind of has no control and will just like kill everyone. And that happens later, which is a thing where it's like, oh, how convenient every time he faces like an actual fight where he might get defeated, he doesn't. It kind of takes away the stakes a little bit. Well,
Abercrombie's using D&D rules. He's just doing barbarian rage.
Yeah,
that's what they do. I
trust you on that.
But they win the fight, and then you actually don't see, but they leave for their journey. Even though Logan is like quite beat up, but he's not dead. But he's beaten in the face like so many times and stabbed. But he's gonna be fine.
But he kicked apart like 20 guys. So
yeah. And then it turns out the people who were chasing them the whole time were the practicals, because the other Inquisitor sent them after him. And then at the very end, Glockta is going to be sent to this other city.
Kyrgyzstan.
Dagoska.
Dagoska to...
Isn't that one of the places Putin took in Crimea?
It's Dagestan.
It's not Dagestan.
The Donbass.
Donbass, yeah.
Isn't that Kanye album?
So then it's setting up this, what is going to happen in the second book, whereas Glockta is going to a new city where he has to like try and save the city because it's under attack from the Gurkish.
But like, why would they send the fucking Inquisitor guy? Like, it's a totally different job.
Because the Inquisitor they have there disappeared and he's like, go find out what happened to him.
I mean, it's for plot reasons he has to go. I mean, it's just kind of like that. Because clearly... Joe Abercrombie is someone who had a master plan for the trilogy, for like the plot lines, and like he just had to go there for the next book. So he'd put in the end of the first book, oh, where the head Inquisitor is like, I'm sending you over here. And so he does. And it's like, there's nothing in this book that really like tells you why. It's just kind of a thing he does. So because I have read the rest of the series, this is actually like kind of different. The way that it is kind of different in that there's a trilogy and it's like was meant to be a trilogy just like in general. And it sort of wraps up all of the plot lines in the trilogy and then it's done. And then I think if I had to guess, and then, you know, it did pretty well. And so Joe Abercrombie was like, you know, what if I just write more? But instead of making it the same main characters doing just new things or just sort of adding a thing, they didn't find out about the new blah blah blah, instead starting with book four, five, six, they're just like the people who are minor characters in the main trilogy kind of get their own story, like each book kind of just nobody important at all in the main trilogy, in the first trilogy, they just get their own thing, and the main characters of the trilogy, they're not in it at all.
It's an expanded universe.
Yeah, it really is kind of expanded universe. But then, after those did well, he then starts a new trilogy, but takes place kind of like a generation later. And it's still mostly not the same characters at all from like the main trilogy. So that part is still done and wrapped up, but you kind of get sort of like further, you do get still further adventures. And like the, which I did like the later trilogy too. It has this first Industrial Revolution and then French Revolution vibe to it, to what's going on in the plot that I thought was interesting. But you can stop at the end of book three and feel satisfied, and you don't have to read the rest either.
I read the original trilogy like 10 years ago, and I felt no need to go on with the other ones, and I liked it. But like, you could just stop there. But you can't stop after book one.
It's like a really long prologue.
But you know what? He planned it out, and he wrote it for a few years. He was doing something else. He was not a writer. He's like a film editor or something like that. And then he wrote this book, and it's spare time, and eventually got it picked up, and he published them. I do like this one line from, I guess, an interview with him or something like that. He said when he got it after, you know, it had been rejected for a year of sending it to publishers, he finally got it accepted, and he said he had a 5-figure deal. He said, well, 7 figures if you count the decimal places.
That's very British.
Well, I think actually the quote is like, if you count the pence columns. So that is extremely British.
I was surprised that this was in the grimdark genre, because it's not that dark. It's a little bloodier than other fantasy stuff, but not even that much.
I think it's grittier.
So yeah, bit. I mean, it is definitely a little bit darker. I think the main difference is, if you look at Lord of the Rings, or even if you look at the Wheel of Time, it's sort of like there are like the definite good guys against the ultimate evil, and the ultimate evil is evil just because it is, and then they've got the good guys who are looking to stop the evil, and that's the main thing of the series. Whereas in both this book and really in Game of Thrones, that's not really the plot at all. It's really, though there's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of magic. It's more like regular people, or normal people, not magical people, normal people being just awful to each other, just like terrible, terrible assholes to each other. And some in the characters have to kind of choose between being good and being evil a little bit.
Okay.
And
it's
you
also
know,
like a character whose job is to torture people to false confessions and shit like that. You know, it's not, that's pretty dark in a different sense.
And he was my favorite character.
Oh, yeah, he's the most interesting character by far.
Yeah,
he's cool, the dude. Most, like, complex character.
He's right? The sassiest.
The other characters are pretty. He is, because he has a lot of things. He'll think something when somebody says something. Like, but, I mean, it's usually just like oh, fuck
bullshit.
Your mother.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we recently read a different fantasy book called Fourth
If I Did It.
Oh, oh right. I read that, too. Now, that was more science fiction, but no, we recently read Fourth Wing.
Forensic science fiction.
And man, did Fourth Wing suck. I still thought at the end I was finally interested, but this was like, so this book was so much better.
And they didn't say clit once.
It also didn't have dragon telepathy as a major plot point.
No.
This was a much more, I mean, there is magic in the book.
But the magic is like, just okay. Make that guy explode. It's like, yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah, the magic is the same magic from Scanners. But, you know, and then there's a scene where Joan Baez just like lights a whole forest on fire because people annoyed him and just roasts dudes. But it's mostly like real people just being badass or being scumbags.
It's like if the Eye of Aragon was written competently.
Yeah, nobody said anything bustily, not even once.
I mean, it was implied.
Oh, every time a woman talks.
And we do not know. That is a thing. We do not yet know the evil or good position of Earth's eighth most noble gas.
And so I thought the characters were all really interesting. And even though built on, you know, fantasy archetypes, they felt like real people and unique. And I thought the plot was interesting and made you want to read to find out what happens next instead of just have to slog through to the end. So all the pieces like fit together. So I read the series. Now I'm going back. I read the first one again. And I'm like, oh, I see. I remember that now. That was in this book. And there's even a little line, the little like throwaway line, where at the contest where Giselle wins, there's this little thing where Giselle's father is there, who's like, you know, some super, you know, rich aristocrat dude, and he sees Baez and he goes, and there's a little like line, there's like one little paragraph, and then the father goes, oh, him, he looks familiar, he couldn't be, and it's just a one little line. It's like, oh, that's, he really did set up that plot line. That's going to be important in a later book, or for the later books. It's like he really does have a plan for everything.
I don't even remember that
and
part.
One of the practical you meet right at the very end, named Vitari, the red-haired lady. It's like, oh, no, she's going to be important. And like lots of other stuff. It's like, oh, it fits. Okay. Anyway, I like that.
As the only person here who hasn't read them all, I would like to read the next one.
You know, this is definitely like what I'm looking for in a fantasy novel. It doesn't have, you know, many pages of exposition where it just like dumps the exposition at you. You find out the world and you find out the backstory and all this stuff in a way that makes sense to uncover it as part of the plot instead of having it just dumped on you.
And zero poems or songs.
Yeah. And nobody eating pancakes for extended periods of time, worrying about how they're going to feed more little people more pancakes. I don't think there are any dwarves at all. And it's the opposite. There's a whole bunch of like 8 foot tall people. They're like very active pituitary glands in this country. So I read the trilogy a decade ago or so. And it wasn't new then. I don't know why I read it then. This book's almost 20 years old.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I hadn't even thought about the fucking dragon book because I forgot about it already because it was stupid. Even though I don't think we were that harsh on it in the episode, but
we were harsh enough. We came around on it by the end, but we still felt that
we made fun
most
of
it was dumb. It was mostly dumb.
It was mostly dumb. Yeah, this felt. I think maybe the difference between like the dark grim or whatever the fuck you said there.
Grim.
This felt like a fantasy novel for adults. Like
as opposed
people
to
who know
adult
that
fantasy, which is just book porn with
elf
wizards.
Titties.
Yeah.
But the other book that we read was for teenagers, it felt like. Yeah, that one was dragon stuff, and this one was dragon nuts across your face. Much more mature.
But in a nice way.
In the way that you'd like. Hmm.
In the way you're looking for.
So yeah, I think I'd recommend it to anyone who. I mean, if you don't like fantasy, you're not going to like this book, though. At the end of the day, I don't think.
No, I mean it is pretty much. I don't know a fantasy book exists that isn't mostly tropes, in terms of a lot of it. But that's what makes it fantasy is those things. So it's hard to find one otherwise.
Yeah, it's like there's only so many variations on chocolate chip cookie out there. You need to have the major parts are really set. But I thought it was fun. And if you like fantasy, you should read this. But you probably already did. And if you don't like it, I don't think this is the one to start with. But it is just a fun... Like, stuff is always happening.
As someone who doesn't really like fantasy generally, I did like this one. So, it might be an easier way in than...
High praise.
Yeah. You know, it's like... The things I don't like about fantasy are a lot of stuff, you know, that we've made fun of here. You know, like songs and elves and poems... And way too much backstory about like how the elf gods farted out a continent, and it's like I don't know, man, whatever. But this didn't have that. This had a guy who punches people, and another guy who makes guys explode, and a lady who likes to shoot people in the face with a bow. I was like, all right, yeah, cool, I'm good with that.
And the characters are colorful and interesting and memorable, whereas I don't fucking remember it. Like, there are like 19,000 characters in Lord of the Rings, and they're mostly blurred together for me.
Yeah.
No. Where here, everyone is very distinct.
They're all the same. They're just different heights.
Yeah. Here, though, every character is like an extreme kind of thing. So maybe that's a criticism if you're like a higher brow reader. That's probably like, wow, they're caricaturish. But they're memorable. You know right away. Like, you don't forget in the middle of a chapter. Like, if you put the book down for a few minutes and come back to like, who is this? You're like, oh, yeah. It's the guy who's crippled and is snarky. Like, oh, yeah, it's the rich, spoiled asshole guy. Or, oh, yeah, it's the barbarian guy. Like, you could follow their plots. And you cared about them. And they end on, like, a cliffhanger every time, so it's kind of paced well. It's just a fun page-turner of a book. Will we do the other ones? I don't know.
I'd like to.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read them. I want to know how it ends. And it's not hard to read. It's, you know, it's a little long, but it's not, like, high fantasy long, where he's like, I'm so fucking bored.
Yeah, I wasn't really bored. It was just a lot to read in a week.
Yeah. All right, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter, Drunk Guys, or X at Drunk Guys BC.
Go to Facebook and Instagram at Drunk Guys Book Club.
And the first law is you should go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub and support the podcast. Or just leave us a review. The second law is it should be 5 stars.
The other second law from the book we never talked about is don't eat human meat, which you can do with us on Goodreads.
They call me Long Pig.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.